Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to Southpaws, episode 398, How Not to Run a Con. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Shiva.
And boy howdy, we've got some weird topics this week for you guys.
Quite a range.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've got the usual horribleness in our political world. God. I didn't mean to do that, but I did it anyway. Political
world. You're just
world.
That much of a furry.
I know. We have some really dark shit that we're going to like content warning and put a timer on so that you can skip ahead and skip it if you don't want to hear it. A extensive bit on a convention board chairman shooting himself in the face repeatedly.
Like shooting his con in the face repeatedly.
And some cool video game shit plus more. Oh, yeah, and the 3D printed guns libertarian is also a pedophile. Big surprise.
Yeah.
So,
like,
where should we...
Like, you sent me that Venn diagram of libertarians and, like, the libertarian circle and the pedophile circle were not 100% overlapping, but they were very close.
Excuse me, it's called a pedophilia, or whatever it is.
You know how you pronounce that?
No.
Pedophilia.
Oh, right, right. Oh, goodness me. So, where should we start this week, guys?
I would say the shenanigans with Everfree.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about one of our two topics tonight that can be described as screwing the pooch.
Oh, God. This is in the not literal sense, thankfully. So Everfree Northwest is a My Little Pony fan convention that's existed since 2012 or so. They're older than Nightmare Nights was and is still going into the year 2018. Actually, they've had their 2018 and their next event is in 2019 in May. So I think a while back we discussed briefly the My Little Pony fan convention called Crystal Mountain Pony Con in Utah. I think I brought it up on the show. And how it was a real shit show. They'd moved it from Salt Lake City to Provo, which is a good distance away. Everybody had to take expensive Ubers or whatever. And they were engaging in some shenanigans. Like, they were trying to stack the vendor hall to get more money for the convention, even though that would dilute the money pool for the vendors and cause them to lose money. It was some very bad business. And there was an artist who goes by the name Midnight Premiere who raised the alarm over this and ultimately pulled out and did not go to the convention. And this resulted in a number of other vendors pulling out. And the convention only ever had a little under 200 paying attendees.
And about 35 vendors, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the crummy bit is that, like, the total attendance, like, inclusive of everybody, was only 208. So a chunk of the number was also staff. This convention didn't go well, and a lot of artists and vendors said, nah, screw you, and left. Well, the vendor head for that event goes by the name Thornwing.
It sounds like you're trying to say Stormwing.
No.
Thornwing?
Thornwing. No.
Oh, it's with an N. Thornwing.
Thornwing.
Okay. All right, that makes more sense. I thought it was Thornwing.
This person is the con chair of Everfree Northwest, the convention that is the subject of this segment of the show. Crystal Mountain happened. This artist, Midnight Premiere, found herself fired without a reason from the art staff of Everfree Northwest. They blamed her for, quote, leaking damaging information about the con, and that was practically also impossible because the person who leaked the information also was sending photos of the event itself, and she didn't go. So a flimsy dumbass pretense to ban this artist who impugned the quality of a failed convention, I guess.
They impugned this con chair's honor.
And then the board president of Pegasi Northwest, which is the parent LLC, the 501c3, whatever, that runs Everfree Northwest, the convention, literally made a Twitter account to fight with this artist. This isn't just like, oh, they run their mouth off and it was a burner account. This happened over the course of like 3 or 4 days where this guy was just going back and forth and going back and forth and insulting and belittling and calling everybody that replied to him negatively bullies. So I'm going to pull up the article now because it's easier to do it because they actually sat down and wrote it out. So this is from Horse News, the bastions of journalistic credibility of the My Little Pony fandom. But I was involved in this story, at least as a participant, and I'm screenshotted in there no less than 3 times. It's fun. So, Twitter users from around the world are calling for a boycott of Everfree Northwest today after a series of over 100 tweets from the head of the convention, Kyle Elliott, going by the Twitter handle TheBigKyle1, number one, the president of the board that runs Everfree Northwest engaged in a dispute with fandom artist Midnight Premier, who is removed from the staff of Everfree Northwest following the situation at Crystal Mountain PonyCon. The resulting turmoil, as the vice chair Coles described it, left the Everfree Northwest executive team shocked. They were not alone. Midnight Premier, Midprim, was one of several vendors who pulled out of Crystal Mountain PonyCon following the firings of the head of vendor relations. Following the convention, she received word that she was removed from the staff of Everfree Northwest art team for no given reason. Scott Kennersley, who is on the Crystal Mountain PonyCon board, also serves as the chair of Everfree Northwest, according to his own Twitter account. Midprim sent messages to the board president of Everfree Northwest, Big Kyle, seeking an explanation for her removal from the staff. Scott took the events at CMPC as a reason not to trust me, which is not something I can really change, Premier wrote. Kyle told Midprem that she was removed because Scott no longer trusts her to be privy to sensitive information, but also claimed that it was not about her being suspected as a source for the leaks from CMPC. Kyle proceeded to tweet this text to Midprem, which was deemed by others as threatening, bullying, and disgusting. Quote,
and also poorly spelled. Like, yes. Oh my god, he needs a grammar check.
Solve weird and odd problems as they arise. I took the time to dig into this whole situation, and I told you I think Scott was rough from it, customer service perspective. I'm just going to read this verbatim. But he is one of the most upstanding individuals in this entire community and has done toms for it. He should get an achievement for helping so many cons as he does right now because people don't like how he talked to them. Doesn't give them a right to demand anything from him of the or the convention. You volunteered for staff. You were approved to be on the design team. You were then removed because a trust issue developed between you and Scott. You've also continued to push a willful lie on Twitter in regards to this being about you being the source of the leak. One word. As stated before and above, that's not why you were removed. Allowing that narrative to continue under your influence is manipulating the narrative so you can continue to attempt to throw shade at Scott. But it's getting to the point that what you were doing is nearing the end of anything resembling constructive and now beginning to become petty and destructive. Like, he's missing spaces here. You will not shame or bully anyone into responding to you from Everfree Northwest staff. You have an answer to the question you wanted, why you were let go from staff, by reaching out to me and the chairs asking for that. You received it from me, the singular person above Scott. And I'm saying Scott did not act how I would have, but he feels you are no longer trustworthy to be on the design team and around sensitive convention information. You're definitely doing the opposite of regaining his trust if you wanted to be back on staff at Everfree Northwest. But now that you have the answer, you demand more answers from specific people? No, I'll wait 24 hours for your apology before I take further action. So he's making threats to this artist who's just been fired from her design position. Like, let me tell you, getting art staff for conventions already a pain in the half. So randomly firing a perfectly competent artist is dumb as shit to begin with. It was speculated by some that this account may be a fake account made by someone who is impersonating Kyle. As for the authentication of this Twitter account being the head of Everfree Northwest parent company, there are several pieces of evidence. First would be the fact that the official Everfree Northwest Twitter account actively follows the account. The account first follow is from the embattled con chair himself. Second would be a few tweets from the vice chair of the convention acknowledging the issue and asking for calm. He's like, I'd like everyone to be concerned about Everfree Northwest to take a step back for a moment. Regardless of your current thoughts, understand that Twitter is not a good place for reliable info. Take everything with a grain of salt. The account is new, which implies Kyle created a Twitter account for this purpose. In the several hours after the initial tweets, the account sent 135 other messages to Midprim and other Twitter users. These tweets were deemed by many accounts to be shocking and unprofessional. He told some concerned parties that they were, quote, not welcome at Everfree Northwest, and told others, quote, don't come, while repeatedly claiming that those raising concerns about the situation and his handling of it were abusive and bullies. Kyle's cries of abuse and bullying stem from his assertion that Midprim did not honor a reported agreement made to wait 1 week for an answer from Scott as to the justification for her removal before going public with her concerns. Midprim holds that there was no agreement, rather a suggestion. The public argument drew the attention of many, some of which proceeded to call for the boycott of Everfree Northwest in 2019. The tweets even caused some Everfree Northwest staff to respond. One design team member wrote, count me out, and I don't know if it'll make it past 2019. Horse News attempted to get an official statement from Everfree Northwest and the vice chair. The Everfree Northwest Twitter account said this, our exec team is honestly shocked by the events of the past several days. There's a great deal of recovery and correction to be done. We'll have an official professional response before long. But then the vice president said this, For the time being, Every Northwest is unable to give an official response. I understand that that is not a satisfying answer. Please believe me that it is not at all satisfying for me either. Right now, all of our department heads are working hard to address things internally, and we're humbly asking for the community's patience while we work things out. There will definitely be a public official response to this in the near future. I sincerely apologize, but it really will need to wait, hopefully no more than a few days. Thanks for your understanding. It's unclear at this time if anything will happen as a result of Kyle's actions. And then there's an editor's note. Midnight Premiere was never one of our sources for the CMPC article. In fact, our first direct communication from her came on September 15th, over a month after the initial post. Anyone who believes she was involved in our coverage in any way is a fucking idiot. And then, of course, a massive litany of screenshots from this guy's Twitter account. So, the net result being, president of the board basically made a Twitter account to beef with people and didn't stop for several days. The board, and I say board with quotation fingers because it's only three people, is this Kyle guy, the asshole in question, Thornwing, the Conchair who fired the artist, and the Conchair's brother. So there's three people in charge at the very top, and there will be nothing done because two-thirds of the people on the quote board are the ones involved in this story acting in bad faith,
and the third is related to one of them.
Yeah. So basically Everfree Northwest has just screwed the pooch really, really hard. They banned people over Twitter. They said, you're not welcome, I'll save you a five-hour drive, blah, blah, blah. They told multiple people to not come. They told me not to come, which is funny because I wasn't going to go anyway, but okay. Had a couple of artists be like, well, why don't you just ban me too? Because I ain't coming, fucker. Like, very reserved and quiet people, like Full Paper said something, Pixel Kitty said something.
Oh my God, really?
Never says anything.
Yeah.
She's like, you guys need to fix this now. And Pixel Kitties is like the artist for the phony fandom.
Yeah.
Like, she is probably
also super chill.
Oh, yeah. She's usually super chill, has a really good, well-regulated Twitter presence, and is a really nice person. But she was like, yo, this ain't right. So you need to fix this. And the thing is, it's also really interesting because the one person that the guy wasn't a massive dick to was like this minor actor guy. He was a massive dick to every artist he was talking with, all of which were women, that he was being actively antagonistic to. But this actor dude starts talking to him, and eventually that's what got him to shut up, because he realized that the eyes of talent are upon him. Mm-hmm. Like, never mind the fact that some of the artists that he banned over Twitter are people that have done work on the My Little Pony comic as cover artists or whatever else, and that one of the artists specifically that he told not to come works at an animation studio, like, and is in industry.
These are people you want as guests at a BronyCon, not people that you ban and alienate.
So, like, this has really lit up a lot of my chats on Twitter because it's just so astounding. As you said, Fuzz, I'm a former con chair. I was involved in the pony fandom. I worked with every single one of the vendors that got banned by this guy, and they were all nice and chill. Like, I literally resurrected the con account just to throw shade and then just logged back out again. So it's become this big flashpoint around the con that will basically be the largest one after BronyCon closes down next year. And that's assuming that they get to continue as well, because this is severely damaging. So Shiva, you work with a lot of vendors.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say that the vendors talk?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Vendors talk. Dealers talk. When some con treats somebody badly, like, they let each other know. So there's no mystery when somebody's doing some shady stuff, and this is definitely shady.
Yeah. And for you, Fuzz, you know, you've never had to deal with any type of nonsense like this as a vendor.
No, like I tweeted, like, I've been going to cons, furry and non, for over 20 years. I've been vending at furry cons for 10 years and other cons. And, like, I've had situations that were, like, confusing, or maybe something, the room layout wasn't exactly what it was supposed to be. And minor little things that are usually easily overcome, especially if you're dealing with a vendor head who is open and communicative and willing to work with their vendors. I've never seen a board president just be this openly hostile to people that you want at your con. I know for a lot of people, the vendors, the dealer's room and who's in it are a big draw to particular conventions. And I'm not only, you know, a long-term vendor, but I was also a board member for 8 years. I was a staff member, not only of Furry Fiesta, I was also on staff of OklaCon. I was their con book guy for a couple of years. So, I mean, I've got some experience dealing with con staffs and dealing with vendor leads from the business side of it. And yeah, this is absolutely ridiculous. And I know, like, all the furry publishers talk to each other. We have a Telegram group. It's mostly for sharing information, best practices. You know, it was ideally created as like things like, hey, InDesign is doing this. Does anyone know how to make this happen? Or has anyone had to deal with this issue or whatnot? So I know in my little area of vending, the other people that are doing my kind of business, we are very tight knit and we talk. And I know that the artist communities are exactly the same. There are groups of artists that talk, and also just vendors pay attention to what's going on in a general sense as to how vendors are treated by conventions. Like, I saw a furry artist that I don't even work with had a shitty experience with a particular con a couple years ago. And, of course, my ears perked up, you know, and I paid attention to how that was handled. Because I'm like, well, if they're going to treat one person shitty, you know, that's how they handle vendors. So, looking at this con, like, if this was a furry con that was... I mean, it's in Seattle, so, you know, we've been vendors in Seattle before. If this was a furry con, I could have conceivably been considering going to it. But if it was a furry con and acted like this, I wouldn't go. And you can bet I'd be fucking sharing those tweets with the other people in my little circle of vendor friends.
The artists in question are all very highly regarded, like I said. So, like, the fact that Pixels Kitty said something is major, but, like, all the people that were banned are people that I had in vendors at Nightmare Nights, and they were all fine to deal with. And there's tweets like the board guy being, like, going by the definition of bully, I think every Northwest is going to have a lot of banned people and not that many attendees, and the guy's reply is absolutely okay with this.
Wow.
And there was a one slightly further up, it's like, hundreds can support her, but she knows she is intentional manipulating this and lying. Also, they don't need to attend every Northwest. Not like it is required for vendors to attend. And the reply is like, who wants to tell him? Because vendors are a major draw. Vendors are a major way to get the word out that they're selling at your con, that your con is good and they're there to sell you shit.
It's basically marketing that you didn't pay for. Like, vendors pay you to go to a con, and then they tell all their followers that they're going to be at X con. And some of these vendors that are affected by this particular situation have fairly large followings and are well-regarded members of the community. And like Savrin said, have done professional work specifically in My Little Pony, in the fandom that is built around this. And it's just completely bonkers to me.
Yeah, and so
this would happen.
One of the artists that I further forgot about was Ashley Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
And so Abigail Starling and Ashley Nichols, they do they have their brand like My Dreaming Star. They do cutesy stuff. It's mm-hmm. both furry and pony related. And so, like, they made that cool band from EF Northwest, and it's like the rainbow that's on fire with the metal lettering. And like Sophie Scruggs, one of the band artists, she's done IDW work. Then there's other artists that are just like, hey, why don't you just fucking ban me too, because I ain't coming, you know. And these are other artists like Rat of Drawn, who do very cute and very lewd stuff. It's just an astounding thing. And like, one of the lines that they throw is like, I've got a vendor waiting list 150 deep. They haven't even opened their vendor registration for this year. And I'm sure he's probably, like, talking hyperbole, like, in a given year, I have a thing that long, but not at this rate, you know, because bronies and fans in general have short attention spans and short memories, but vendors and talent don't. They see how a board member / con chair will treat somebody they have power over and then kind of extrapolate. It's like, oh, if they can get away with it, this is how they treat me.
Mm-hmm. And you also just don't want to give money and exposure to shitty people and support an event run by shitty people. And I said this on Twitter, like, I legit feel sorry for the rest of the staff of Everfree Northwest, because it's like, we know what being on staff is like. It's fairly thankless. It's hard work, but and you do it for free, and you do it because you believe in it, and you want your event to be a great weekend for your attendees. And I'm just like, all these poor people that have been putting a lot of hours into making this con the best it can be are really being let down by their leadership right now in a huge way.
And the only person to have really said anything aw fuck related is the vice chair, who basically is like, how did this even happen?
And didn't that's he quit?
A real question. No, he hasn't quit as far as I know.
But it also said down there, I thought it said lower in the article he had.
Well, there's been a couple of artists that have said, fuck you, and quit. You know, I got my tweet, rest in peace, Everfree Northwest, murdered by its idiot man-child of a board president, got screen capped for the article. Rat of Drawn says, can you please officially ban me from Everfree Northwest 2? I don't want to be part of a con that treats my friends and fellow artists this way, and I'd love to get that shirt. Thanks. It's the most impressive meltdown I've ever seen. And, like,
I would like to put it out to those artists, come and join the furry fandom, start drawing some anthros, and start vending at furry cons. Do you even draw ponies? Like, there's pony artists at furry cons.
Yeah, they don't even have to be adult.
Furry cons will treat you right.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, I saw you tweet, Shiva, you're like, yo, hey, Sophie Scruggs, come vend at us, we'll treat you right. And I have no doubt that if I reached out to her, I could be like, yo, you guys want to give it a shot? Because, yeah, we want to show these people that there's better ways and better fandoms out there, really. Like, the other thing, too, any artist that's pinning their hopes on the future of the pony fandom really needs to get their shit together, because there's not a lot of time left. And
a couple of years, maybe.
Yeah. But the thing is, and this I pointed out in our chat, of the big three pony conventions, that's still less than 10,000 attendees. And that's assuming they were all unique, and I know that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's people that go to all the big pony cons each year.
Just like there's people that go to, you know, multiple furry cons.
But I'm like, there's like 18,000 in the top two furry cons.
Yep.
So, and again, that's all overlap, but at this point, pony artists need to branch the fuck out, because time is running short.
That's why a few episodes ago, like, I shouted out Choco Pony, because I saw him at Worldcon, and I bought, you know, some lanyards and little things from him, and, like, I thought he had a really good business plan, because, like, he started in ponies, and he had a lot of pony stuff, but he also had furry stuff, and because it was, like, a general sci-fi con, he also had Doctor Who stuff, so, like, there's a guy who's kind of looking for the future, like, I should diversify my product line so I can do more cons once the pony con thing starts kind of falling off.
And he vended at Anthrocon. He was across from us. And he also vended at Fiesta.
Yeah, I thought I saw him at Haven, too.
He may be. I think he's in the area.
I think I saw him at Acon, too. But I could be wrong.
He tries to do vending full-time. Like, he tries to make this his life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame him. He's probably going everywhere every weekend he can, which is pretty rad. I mean, it would exhaust me, but, you know, this way he gets to do what he wants. So more power to him. It's a really weird situation, and one that I was not expecting to see. This is one of those things where, like, you early on, when the pony fandom was thriving, you'd expect to see something dumb like this. Some guy completely power mad from horse fame, not late stage ponyism, you know, trying to bully other artists and vendors. Turns out that they can go off and do other shit while your reputational damage is permanent.
And just as a vendor lead, taking revenge on one of your staff members for an event, not your main one. So staff at Everfree, and they opt to pull out of a different convention entirely, which is notably going south. So they have to cover their butts. This is their livelihood that they're doing. So taking revenge on a staff member over an event at another con where they have to protect themselves is not professional. So as a vendor lead, like, that offends me. Two, as a past board president of Fiesta for 7 years, watching another board president basically step in and start waging war, that would be like me going rogue on Twitter and attacking a staffer after Path or Sable dismiss them. Not cool. One, that should be handled by the chairman and the chairman alone. Two, it's not really your place to be doing that kind of call out. There's channels, there's PR. This is not how you con chair. This is not how you president.
Yeah.
It's so inappropriate on so many different levels. Like, this whole situation hits really close to home for what not to fucking do as either A, staff, B, chair, or C, president. Because not cool, not right, not appropriate. Not at all.
So it'll be interesting to see where this goes in the coming days. From what it looks like right now, the con is just going to stick its head in the sand and hope this all blows over. And like Saverin said, that may work for the average attendee who's not, especially if they're not paying particularly close attention to the social media. But your vendors and your artists they're going to keep this in mind.
And yeah, the thing is, with this happening so far out, vendors are not locked in to going. They haven't built up inventory for this convention. They can safely drop it by just not applying and spending their time and effort elsewhere.
They don't even have any sunk costs in table, reg, or flights, or anything like that.
Yeah, like right now, a vendor to drop every Northwest, it costs them nothing.
Yeah, like there's plenty of other... I mean, hell, go to any furry con and you could probably make money.
Yeah, or hell, just find a con in your area. There's a lot, you know? You don't have to stick to just the pony scene. Like, just diversify some of your art a little and you'll be fine. So there's no reason to support Evergreen Northwest. It fucking sucks. And there will probably be a follow-up on this next week if we can record next week. You know, we'll see what happens. Because it really is a messed up situation, and it'll be interesting to see if they lose any of some of their guests over this, because they don't have any of the main six cast. This season of Pony added a group of children to Twilight School. They're the new six.
Mm.
And that includes, there's like a yak and a little dragoness and a pony, one of the fish birds, hippogriffs. Yeah, hippogriffs, a griffin, and a changeling kid. Yeah. Basically, it's Twilight's embassy school for all the foreign kids.
Oh, okay.
Basically, Equestria is still going for that cultural victory where they go in and just befriend the shit out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because they also have magical WMDs, but they don't say that part aloud. So they're like, we have magical WMDs, but let's be friends first, okay? So yeah, they already had some of their guests lined up, but it'll be interesting to see if anything happens with that. So I think that about wraps it up for this. I mean, we talked about this for 30 minutes, about this one topic.
We have opinions about cons and how they're run.
Yeah. Especially for a very, like, similar kind of in our overarching genre convention. Like, there's a lot of similarities, a lot of crossover of fans and personnel between bronies and furries.
I had somebody contact me today saying, hey, isn't this run by old Rainforest board? No, it's not. But maybe the person is. I don't know if they're former Rainforest.
I know Rain, the board behind Rainforest and Furlandia. Like, I believe they advised them and they lent them some equipment and expertise. Yeah, like,
they're separate organizations.
Like, early on. I don't know.
Probably some staff crossover.
Because it's local to where
Rainforest is. It's local. It's anthro-animals of some sort.
Right.
So on the tangent of con stuff, have you guys heard any of the stuff about Midwest Artist Alley shenanigans going on?
No.
I have, yeah.
This got flagged to my attention because I'm interested in all things Alley. So their Artist Alley is taking a tangent I'm not agreeing with at all. They're not... If you read their How to Be Artist Alley, basically you can't bring much pre-made stuff. Mm-hmm. You're limited like to pre-mades, like a display of jewelry and a thing of prints. Everything else has to be done there. So drawing commissions. And I'm not sure what else any kind of like art that you can do there. I mean, maybe some chainmail bracelets. But the vast majority of, like, Artist Alley, if you're not doing drawn commissions, that a lot of other media doesn't lead itself to on the fly. It either takes time or you don't have the equipment. Like, you can't take a kiln with you to do any kind of pottery. Chainmail takes hours. Leatherworking takes hours, unless you're doing a minor customization. Painting takes hours. Even digital media takes hours.
Yeah.
So, I'm not terribly impressed with how their alley is going. It's kind of a callback to how some of the alley attitudes used to be, which is, if you're not a drawn physical media artist, you're not real.
Or you should be in the dealer's room, is basically the attitude back in the day. And what's interesting is, like, I wonder how this will affect someone like Bucktown, because Bucktown actually did a song on his album years ago that, like, he tried to get into an artist alley at a con to sell his CDs, and they wouldn't let him because they were pre-made CDs. And it's like, a small musician that's not getting a dealer's table, but he has a stock of CDs. You know, he can roll up in there with a rolling bag full of CDs and sell for the day, you know? And, you know, as someone creative in our community, he should be able to sell in the artist alley. But if the pre-made ban affects like that as well, you know?
Yeah, they basically said, and I can pull up their page, it's like, it's a creative space which should be very dynamic and blah, 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 blah. And I just read it. It's like, I look at the people come into my alley. It's like, a lot of them sell print. A lot of them sell jewelry, pins, all this other stuff. And it's stuff that they've made and they've designed, but they've ordered it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty much hamstringing a lot of people who are not overnight sketch artists.
That'd be like saying that I couldn't sell books there because I didn't print and bind them myself, you know?
Yeah.
They were created by a print company.
Back in the day, they were made by you.
Yeah, but like, even then, it would have been difficult. But I mean, the only thing I'd agree with is, like,
you bring all the stuff uncut and you just junk and then glue it.
Yeah, I have space behind this artist alley table for my glue binder and my ream cutter
and your printer.
Print
on demand books. Okay, it'll take you 5 minutes for this one book. Mm-hmm. So nobody gets to buy anything until then.
Yeah. So yeah, that wouldn't work for me.
Oh, gotta swap out to the glossy shit. We gotta print the San Picos art book. Give me a second. Gotta swap the stock.
I read that and I'm like, wow, that would impact so many artists in the fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the little people who do like a little pop-up table, and they do sell sketches too, but they also have all this other stuff which helps them pay for their bills. Because a lot of those little tchotchke stuffs help pad everything.
Like Heather Bruton famously sells like a ton of bookmarks. In addition to her prints. And she designs these images specifically to be used on the bookmarks. And it's like,
you couldn't bring them.
Can you imagine saying, you know, oh yeah, you can't sell your bookmarks. You literally just have to make all your money on drawings. And all the little extras, I mean, that adds up. You know, they're selling a buck or two here or there while they're working on the sketches. Because, like, they can only draw so many sketchbook commissions in a weekend.
Yeah. There's only so many hours in a day.
Yeah. They rely on print sales and other merch sales to kind of cover the costs of being there and, you know, making a living as an independent creator. I do have a question for you, though, Shiva, that I'm not clear on. Is this a change that they implemented this year? Or is this a situation where people started looking into policy that's always been there and questioning it?
I have no idea. I honestly don't know.
Because there's another thing that had been, the no copyrighted characters thing came up. Like, they have a rule in the dealer's room about selling merch with copyrighted characters. So, you know, dockies of Simba showing off his lion cock or something like that. And apparently that had been a rule that had been in place for a long time, but, like, no one had really pointed it out on Twitter and gotten a conversation started about it. And apparently they've kind of clarified that position since. So I'm kind of curious about that on the artist's alley. So.
Yeah, I don't know if this is how it's always run. It got pointed out to me, and it was basically like, someone said, do they not understand how like fursuit makers and other small businesses actually work? And I was like, wow, yeah, because you can't like sit there and sew like
I was just thinking that. Bring your sewing machine with you and make fucking tails to sell. So bring your sewing machine, your stuffing, and all of your plush and physically make it right there on site.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about another furry con that it's been like in the cards for a few years. It's one of the several cons that popped up after Rainforest's demise that said we're going to do a con in Washington State also. It's called Furvana. Their first year is next year, actually about a year from now. It's September 27th to 29th, 2019. I saw somebody mention it on Twitter. And I went and checked out their website because it's like for a couple years it's had like a placeholder website and they've actually got a more full site now. And it's interesting because like I don't think it'll have a real big attendance because it's not in Seattle. It's on the shore of Washington State. It's in a town called Ocean Shores. It's pretty much right on the beach. Its problem logistically is that you would have to fly into either Seattle or Portland and then drive about an hour and a half to get to.
Uber would not be, so you'd be looking at renting a car.
So you'd be looking at flying into Seattle, renting a car, driving for about 90 minutes in average traffic to get there. So that might put some people off, but I think it has a real potential to be something kind of unique and kind of fun. And they may not get 3,000 attendees, but I could see them getting like several hundred, definitely. But it sounded really interesting. There's a convention center called the Ocean Shores Convention Center. That's where the convention's going to be at. It doesn't have an attached hotel, but the official con hotel is across the street from it. So it's about a 2 or 3 minute walk.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've rented a car, you can just drive over and park in the convention center parking lot. And if you're on the right side of the building at the hotel, then you have a view of the Pacific Ocean and the beach.
Hmm.
So it, you know, I'm actually sort of considering it as a, maybe that would be a nice place to go for a vacation con.
I can see that.
But I just wanted to mention it because, like, I thought, this has potential for a fun, laid-back convention in a different kind of location that I don't get out to very often, you know?
I do see their location limiting their growth, though.
Yeah.
At least until they move, if they grow enough to move into Portland or Seattle proper, I think that they would may grow in the future.
Yeah.
But I think at least for the foreseeable future, then they're limiting where they can go with this.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that may be their plan. I mean, it may be on purpose. I don't know. But I also just, I kind of like the concept.
I do too.
So wishing them well and putting, just kind of putting a shout out there, you know, if you're in the area or you want to visit that area, end of next September in Ocean Shores, Washington. I may consider going just for fun, just to relax, catch up with people I know that live in the Pacific Northwest kind of area.
Okay, so this next section, we're going to be talking about the gnarly zoo-related shit that popped up. We're going to set a timer for 5 minutes. So if you wish to skip this entire discussion, which is going to be very gold star in the last podcast on the left sort of way, but not funny or pleasant at all, it's just fucked up, you can skip 5 minutes from now. Okay.
So, oh my god, okay, we're done.
So, there was a Twitter account, goes by the name of Zoodonym, well, went by the name because their Twitter account has been nuked, that apparently was an active zoophile and had themselves quite a following, like several hundred people, and had been active in that group for a while. Like, there's apparently a fairly significant group of Twitter users that are furries and into that, but this particular thing, he turned on them and went states evidence or whatever, was for a group of people that are, like, the step beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, there's the people that take the knot, there's people that mess with horse dicks, whatever. Don't do that. Just don't. But these are the people who treat animals like fucking fleshlights and are disposable, and they kill animals for their pleasure. It is beyond fucked up. It's the next level ultra fucked up.
They're calling it zoo sadism.
Yeah. And this person, this Zoodonym person, had basically just been screen capping and had logs of years and years from this one chat room where there was like a couple dozen people in. And it's also apparently, in this particular case, a YouTuber by the name of Kara the Wolf, who is a fairly well-known YouTuber in some regards. He's got like 100,000 subs on YouTube. But It's really impressively bad. And, like, the thing is, this is screen caps. This is logs that goes back for, like, 2 years. This is not like, oh, someone hacked my account and just made shit up. This is, like, this is stuff that happened over a long period of time. And there's videos that basically were incredibly fucked up, and like describing them upsets me, and reading the description turned my stomach. And like we discussed, like we're gonna have to talk about this, but we're gonna have to limit it, and we're gonna have to like content warning the fuck out of it, because holy shit. Like, again, you've got a further 2 minutes and 40 seconds you can skip ahead before I get to the descriptions. So, I mean, I might have to extend the timer because we're not going to get much discussion on this in the process, but it's super fucked up.
Because somebody's probably already skipped.
Yeah.
So someone had the bright idea to combine animal fucking with further animal cruelty and necrophilia.
Yeah, like fucking a roadkill deer. And like, and the thing is, this Caro guy, there's a video of him in a suit head forcing a dog to fellate sex toys, and then he fucks the dog. Like, in his fucking fursuit head? This blows my fucking mind, first of all, that like, furries would do this in their suit, because what the fuck? These are very bespoke things. They're fairly unique. If there's video of you doing this shit and that ever gets out there, holy fuck, oh my god, that's insert furry here, because fursuits are somewhat unique. Like, there was another thing where corpse of a deer is used as a sex toy, a dog's getting horribly
abused,
and like, and the thing is, like, oh, I've seen parts of these videos and I'm so disgusted. I hope those dogs are taken away. They're fucking dead in a lot of these cases. It's really upsetting.
It really is.
Like, holy fuckballs. There'll be a massively content warning link in the show notes, but holy fuck, guys. These motherfuckers are going to be tracked down, and they're going to need to get run out of the community, because holy shit, there is no place for people that hurt animals like that in our community.
That's awful.
Yeah, like, I don't fucking get this at all. We're a fandom that, you know, loves and celebrates animals and takes care of them, and we do all this charity-related shit, and there's people that use them as, like, disposable fleshlights. What the fuck? I'm a fucking former hardened 4chan edgelord dipshit, and this still made me upset.
Yeah.
You know? If it's humans being shits to other humans, that's still humans involved, but these are animals, and what the fuck?
I don't even, like, the whole roadkill deer is gross and yuck, but at least, you know, it's dead. But doing that to, like, a live dog is just, how do you live with yourself?
Yeah, so I mean, that's the 5 minutes. Sorry not to, people have skipped to this point, but it's very upsetting, and I guess I would give thumbs up to the people that are doing the investigative work and confirming the videos, because I don't want to see that shit.
Yeah.
So, no.
Like,
gold star. Ugh.
Yeah, that's how that, all.
I mean, it sucks, but this kind of stuff needs to be brought to light and handled, just like we're kicking out the Nazis, people that do that kind of shit. We can't just hide it under the guise of drama anymore.
No.
It needs to be pointed out and handled. Because
and they need to get
dealt with by the law.
Yeah.
So enough vaguing about that.
So let's talk about Snoop Dogg.
Yo, this is a cool dog, all right? So Snoop Dogg, Fuzz, what you got?
Okay, so Snoop Dogg says all Trump supporters, including Kanye West, are motherfucking racist.
Did you watch that video of him?
I have not. No.
It's really marvelous.
It's Snoop Dogg saying, yo, what the fuck?
Yeah, and there'll be a link to that article in the show notes. And what was this other thing that you posted, Zabrin? It is Night in the Woods in a foreign language. I'm not sure which language.
Okay, so Night in the Woods. So now we're going into happier topics. Yay.
Yes.
Night in the Woods is getting an official Japanese translation.
That's awesome.
That's really cool, first of all. Like,
I mean, they're this small indie company, and like they're getting a pretty big platform, and they're being translated for a whole other market. Of gamers, that's great.
I really want to get a screenshot of the "no fascists at this party" scene, but get it in Japanese just for the extra amusement factor of it.
And then have it like tattooed in kanji on your forearm.
No, but
no, right above your ass. Because if you're bottoming, no fascists. It says "no fascists at this party."
Yep. And that party's my butt.
That's right.
That is really cool. And in further cool, the PlayStation Mini is coming out. Sony has gotten in the game of, wait a minute, we can sell emulation boxes that run our old software and people will pay $100 for it.
Okay.
We'll put 20 games on there, sure. So it's coming out later this year.
Probably for Christmas.
And it's going to have 20 PlayStation 1 classics on there. Now, what'll be really interesting is if they do any sort of like emulation smoothing or emulation, like if they do stuff to improve it, because the PlayStation, original PlayStation came out in like 96 and was not robust hardware. Like, our phones are massively more powerful than those silly things, and they can do a lot to make the old games look better. So hopefully that'll be the case, because a lot of the games are also in like sub 640 by 480 resolution in some cases, which is really gnarly in our modern world of 4K televisions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
One of the things that people thought is also they might just be reskinned Vita TVs. There's the PlayStation Vita TV, which was a short-lived product that didn't find a market, but it was like...
It's basically like a Fire Stick?
Yeah, like it was kind of like a Roku.
Okay.
Where like you could stream games from like your PlayStation Vita onto the TV, but the thing is the PlayStation Vita barely got anywhere in the US, so it was just like, it really turned out to be a really cheap way to get PlayStation 3 controllers after a while, because you get the box and a controller for like $20 and you can mm-hmm. just throw the box away. But you could emulate PlayStation 1 titles on it really easily. So that might be what it is. They just repurposed the hardware that they got back, which would be fine either way, because you get the original PlayStation form factor mm-hmm. and the startup noise. The PlayStation startup noise was great.
Mm-hmm.
And the first three games they mentioned were Tekken 3, Wild Arms, and Final Fantasy VII. So
they're all pretty...
Final Fantasy VII is a 40-hour RPG. You can get
that's
it on PC,
if you do it right and don't stuff around and get lost like I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, we did talk about last week how the Nintendo Direct and all the Final Fantasy games.
Everything but 8.
Well, actually, I read an article this week about why 8 isn't. So, Final Fantasy VII, this was all before, like, data preservation was kind of a big deal. And so, like, 7, 8, 9, their shit's just gone. They didn't keep the assets. They didn't keep the original scale versions of it. So Final Fantasy VII, when they handed over data to Eidos to make the PC version of that, back when the first PC version came out, they gave them an old version that had, like, scenes that had prior been cut for time, and the music was weird. Like, they gave them an incomplete beta version of the title because they didn't have the original Gold Masters anymore. Final Fantasy VIII suffered the same fate, but it didn't get a PC port at the time. And so, like, the one that eventually got out there is, like, essentially an upscaled PlayStation version. Final Fantasy IX had these incredibly nice pre-rendered backgrounds that some of them exist because they were outsourced work and the Western artists kept the original files. But a lot of the original stuff, including all the original render CG that hadn't been compressed, doesn't exist anymore. So, basically, they had to redo backgrounds and stuff from scratch in some cases, or just use the original low poly or low res versions of the files, even in the modern remaster. So 8 is like the pinnacle of Japan not giving a fuck about data preservation, and so there's just no good version of Final Fantasy 8 that exists that they can remaster to put out onto the Switch.
Oh, that sucks.
Like, Final Fantasy VIII for PC also has, like, the shitty MIDI versions because the sound fonts that were different. So, like, the sound fonts on the PlayStation were really good,
mm-hmm.
and PC ones for, like, Windows, not as much. So even though there's still MIDI music, the music sounds significantly different because of how it's rendered out. It's a really neat article because it goes into data preservation and why it's important, but it's unfortunate because 8 is just lost. So, like, if you've got a physical disc of 8, cool. If you've got the digital version of it, yeah. But, like, the original files that were made for the game when it came out in, like, 1999 or whatever just don't exist anymore.
Oh, that sucks.
They're like lost episodes of Doctor Who in a way.
Oh.
Except
I was looking up another link that I was sharing.
They just didn't keep the files around. They deleted it.
Oh.
Because they were like, project's done. We're not going to do anything further with it. Let's start the next one. And they just deleted everything. Hard drive space was a premium back then.
Yeah, but they still had all the shit for the first 7 games, right?
Well, no.
No? Oh, okay.
Wow. Data preservation is a really...
I've seen some people tweeting about that in the occasional thing, because there was like a big thing about, I think it was Nintendo shutting down like these basically pirate sites where people were like trading ROMs and stuff like that.
Paradise, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like that's our our intellectual property and you can't have it. But none of the studios and companies are actually doing anything to preserve this video game history. So for a lot of old games, these pirated ROMs are like the only way they exist in a modern playable format.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is like, I agree with copyright, you know, that yes, creators, studios should totally have the rights to their creations, but I mean, they need to do something official with that. There needs to be some sort of preservation effort. If they want to have their copyright and they want to have that control, they need to do something. You know, some sort of video game preservation thing that maybe they could, like, all get in on or something like
that. Yeah, and the thing is, all this work is being done by individuals in most cases. Like, there's, like, the Video Game Museum in Frisco.
Yeah.
And, like, they have a collection of stuff.
Yeah.
They've got some really cool, hard-to-find things, and they've dumped the carts that they've got to have digital backups of it. But that doesn't make them available to the world. There's other things like the Macintosh Floppy Project or whatever. Like, hey, if you find any random-ass floppy disks that are old don't know what's on that shit, send it to us and let's dump them and find out what it is. Because a lot, like, software distribution was much more different back in the day when the internet wasn't really a thing.
Right.
And so, like, a dude write a program and distribute it through his local shop, and you don't know what it was. And it might be a really neat indie, like basically a nascent indie game, or like some bit of software that somebody wrote that nobody would know about it unless,
you know.
And that doesn't give every bit of software intrinsic value, but it's neat to know, like, what independent stuff was being done.
There's very similar issues in the publishing industry too, like old books that have gone out of print, or authors who have passed away a long time ago, and like the rights. Like, if the family or the estate doesn't have the rights and somebody has the rights and nobody knows where the rights are, so nobody can publish it because they don't have the rights to do that. And it's, yeah, there's a lot of lost stuff that our society has created over the centuries that is not really readily available anymore.
This actually came up with, on the rights issues, with the Capcom Beat 'Em Up collection that just came out for Switch and is coming out on PC.
Uh-huh.
Capcom made a lot of side-scrolling beat-em-up games for the arcade in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were kind of generic, but then they had a couple licensed ones, like Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Oh, right.
And they did a Punisher and Nick Fury one. They did a Aliens versus Predator one. Mm-hmm. And these ones couldn't be included in the collection because they'd have to go back and renegotiate rights. Nick Fury and Punisher both are Marvel, now Disney.
Yeah.
And Capcom and Disney don't have a good relationship.
They're both in current properties, which means that the cost of licensing those characters is a lot more than it was in the 90s.
Aliens versus Predator, same thing. They're owned by Fox. Predator's getting a new movie soon. Mm-hmm. Cadillacs and Dinosaurs was an indie comic. I don't know who the fuck published those back in the day. But they'd have to find the rights holder for that.
I wonder if Vision was the one that did Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But yeah, there's a bunch of interesting things. Like, they'd want to re-release these highly regarded things. Because, man, Aliens versus Predator, the beat-em-up, was the shit. I loved that side-scrolling game. Like, I'd emulate that and play it in the arcade if I saw it. Because it was a lot of fun. It had two predators and two human characters you could play as, and they were really cool and had their own movesets. It was really neat.
So, side question for you on something you mentioned, that Capcom doesn't have a good relationship with Disney. I'm not familiar with that. Why is that?
Okay, so Marvel vs. Capcom existed prior to Marvel being purchased by Disney.
Yeah, I remember the Marvel Capcom games in the
90s. So Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out and was really cool, and everybody liked it. It had, like, the X-Men and shit in it.
Yeah.
And then Marvel got purchased by Disney. Disney said, well, Fox has the rights to the X-Men, so if you're going to do this next game, Marvel's Capcom Infinite, you can't have certain characters in the roster who've been there since the beginning, and you have to include other characters which are based upon our upcoming movies.
Right.
So, and they kind of had some that functioned as XBs, like Black Panther is in the game, and he functions as a copy of Wolverine. Gamora is in there as a standalone character, and is more of her comics incarnation. He's got a big sword. Pretty cool.
Maybe doubles for Psylocke, because she used her, like, psychic blade a lot and stuff like that.
To a degree. There's obviously, there's Rocket Raccoon, there's Nova. There's lots of characters that they basically squished in, but they also dropped a bunch of characters as well.
Right.
So you basically had a smaller roster of characters in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, and it was only 2v2 and not 3v3, and they had the head-ass Infinity Stone system because that was based on
the movies.
And so basically Disney said, you gotta do all this shit, and it was a big flop. Like, and now it has spelled the end of Marvel vs. Capcom as a game series for the next decade or so.
That sucks.
Because Disney came in, meddled the fuck around, and then the game didn't do well. Mm. Which just sucks, because Marvel vs. Capcom 3 was a lot of fun to watch.
Somewhat weird, because, like, in a couple years, once the Fox deal is, like, fully through, and Disney owns the rights to the X-Men, they could basically do it.
Yeah, so what people said, there just needs to be a Capcom versus Capcom, where it's just Capcom's all characters doing a proper 3v3 fighting game.
Like Smash Brothers, but just with all the characters that they have the rights to or can get the rights to. So I have a cool thing
that's
furry related. This was something that Tieran linked me to tonight that he is backing on Kickstarter. So it's a Kickstarter project. It is a webcomic called Beyond the Western Deep. Now, this is a webcomic that has been running since 2012. You can read it if you want on the web. It's at westerndeep.net. It is now over 300 pages long with multiple side stories. And it is basically a fantasy adventure that evokes memories of the Redwall series, Mouse Guard, and dark classically animated films like The Secret of Nim and Watership Down. And they are doing a print edition. They're going to be doing a hardcover print edition. They've already got volume 2, like, set up and ready to go. This Kickstarter is volume 1, which will be a 112-page long hardcover.
Wow.
And they'll go ahead and do volume 2 as the next Kickstarter, presuming that this one is successful. Considering that it has 14 days to go, and they have raised $14,601 against a goal of $16,000.
I think they'll be fine.
So they've got, what, like, less than $2,000
they have,
to go. So, yeah, they're
$1,399.
They're definitely going to make it. And, you know, there's a bunch of stretch goals. They're doing, like, all of the books will come with, like, a custom ribbon-style bookmark in them if they hit, like, 18.5. Which they very well may do, because it is going super well. And they have a pretty nice little video presentation on their Kickstarter. So it looks like it's a cool looking furry webcomic action adventure fantasy. So I would say go ahead and check it out. Tieran and I have backed it. We're actually, there is a retailer backing level, so we're gonna get that. We're actually gonna be carrying some of them once they're printed. So their current estimated print date is February of 2019, which is not really that far away when you think about it. So these will probably be really nice looking books. So I put the link in the chat there, so you can put that in the show notes.
I'm trying to get something to load here because I saw another cool Kickstarter, but it is a animatronic tails for your suit.
Oh, no kidding.
So once I get that to load, I'll put that in the show notes because it seems pretty neat. But it looks like it just launched. I'll have to provide some more information in the show notes because it doesn't want to load. This one's not a cool thing, but it is also kind of unsurprising. So Cody Wilson, owner of 3D Printed Gun Company, has been charged with having sex with an underage girl.
What?
This is the libertarian guy that believes that everybody has the rights to have access to the blueprints online to 3D print a gun.
And he also runs the website Hatreon.
Which is where all the alt-right Nazi people went to after Patreon said, no, you guys are not going to be on our platform. So they literally started a site called Hatreon.
Yeah. The guy, I mean, apparently, like, everything was all on, like, motel cameras and all this other shit. And he's fled to Taiwan. They're going to try to get extradition order. So that's pretty wild.
Wow.
But it's one of those things where it's like, wow, this libertarian gun nut is also,
I know.
They hooked up on a sugardaddymeat.com or something like that. That just sounds like a fucking Fed honeypot.
Wasn't she like 15 or something?
I don't know. It says a girl under the age of 17. So yes, he was not 17, which in Texas, there's a little bit of wiggle room, but this dude's a grown-ass adult and well outside the wiggle room. It's like,
I'm trying to remember if this was the case, because I skimmed the article today, and I think he was in California, where the age of consent is 18. Of course, the federal age of consent is also 18, so if either of them cross state lines, yes, then it's illegal regardless.
But it is one of those things where it's like, wow, look at this completely unsurprising thing where this guy that's all about the guns and libertarianism also happens to be down for paying for sex with people before checking their IDs, I guess.
Or
just didn't care.
He checked their ID to make sure that they weren't 18. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if he's actually a pedophile, then that was a selling point for him.
Oh, speaking of calling people pedophiles, though, remember that dude that Elon Musk called a pedophile?
He's suing him.
What is it? Like, I hope he sues me, says man sued.
He's right, like, yeah.
He was like, oh, the fact that he hasn't sued me yet proves that I'm right. And the lawyer was like, we just haven't gotten all the paperwork together, but no worries.
We're fucking suing your ass.
Man, Elon Musk is the poster boy.
What, slander or?
It's slander because it was spoken and libel. Or maybe it's libel if it's printed on Twitter. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. He made a leveled a really stupid accusation against a guy who was trying to actually help while he and his fucking child blender didn't work out at all. And this guy, man, like Elon Musk's ability to fuck himself over.
Dude, the other headline that I saw last night was that apparently the FCC is considering looking into Tesla now because Elon Musk had tweeted about he could afford to take Tesla private or something like that. Because
it's some regulatory individual thing.
Investor.
Where
yeah.
It's like his tweeting, his being extremely online has caused him to break up with his girlfriend, gotten him investigated, gotten him sued. And the joke was like, Mal, Meltdown May is really just keeps on happening. Because I guess that was when he first started having his Twitter meltdowns. But it's fucking September, y'all.
Well, you know why this is because this is Elon Gate, so it's really long and drawn out.
God. But yes, his inability to log off. All of you who are telling me to log off, shut up. I will never log off. And the drill tweet, keep yelling at me to shut up. It only makes my opinions worse.
It still amazes me that there is a drill tweet for every occasion. And that people keep screen capping shitty things that dumb people have said and pairing it with a drill tweet when, like, Trump tweets something stupid and there'll be a drill tweet from 2012 or something that matches it perfectly.
In stupid politics news, you saw Ted Cruz's latest bullshit?
Oh, about God.
About Willie Nelson?
No, this is something else, Fuzz. Sheba.
Oh. Okay. Oh, no. So
I may have, but I don't know.
This is about the campaign fundraiser physical mails that went out.
Oh, yeah.
That looked like fucking summonses.
Yeah, they look like official, like, government letters or something.
Yeah, it looks like a fucking summons. In fact, it says summons on the letter, you know, and I saw some of that. It fucking looks like, you know,
an official ass thing.
But like you're getting caught for jury duty or something. Yeah,
and he's done this before and gotten fined for it before. He did it in like California during his attempt to run for president and got caught for that as well. So he's sending out scarograms to grandmas, essentially. And I had to unfriend my aunt. I think I mentioned this last week where she was Beto's going to turn Texas into California. And I'm all like, yes, please. But yeah, that is going to get his ass in trouble. And actually, like in one of the more recent polls among likely voters, Beto's ahead. So get out and fucking vote in November for fuck's sake. Every last one of you. It doesn't matter if you're in Texas. Get out and vote. If you're not in the United States, well, that, you know, good luck.
Every dime that they make through that campaign should have to automatically be refunded and then another fine on top of it.
It's just like everybody in every state that listens to this, please go vote in November. Fuck.
And on that note, Saren, I also want to say I've seen two different polls come out in the last week. One of them had Beto ahead by 7 or 9 points, and the other one had Cruz ahead by like 2 or 3 points. So remember how it was like a foregone conclusion that Clinton was going to win in 2016 and then, oh shit, that didn't happen. I don't care if it says Beto's ahead by fucking 30 points. Get out and vote. Those polls
mean nothing.
Mean nothing. I mean, I was going to say polls are bullshit. I mean, I know they're very scientific and there's a lot of numbers and
but it's bullshit people if you have don't
degrees
vote.
In this shit. But fuck all that. After 2012, don't take anything for granted, even in a safely Democratic district, because actually there was a special election for a Texas state senator recently. The Senate district had been Democratic since Reconstruction, over 100 years. Well, a Republican just won it. So even if you're in a safe Democratic area, get out and vote for your candidate. Get out and vote for Beto this November. And yeah, get out and vote for fucking everything this November. Just because it's not a presidential election doesn't mean it's not very, very important. Because both the House and the Senate are fucking coin tosses at this point. They're completely up for grabs. The amount of could go either way, lean Democrat, lean Republican districts. There's so many of that. If enough of them flip one way or the other, it could go in any direction. And the last thing we want is for Trump to have another 2 years of Republican control in the Congress. Voting in 2018 is really fucking important. I am actually really pissed that I will not be able to vote this year, because so many of my fellow immigrants are applying for citizenship that my lawyer's office emailed me and said, so you applied for citizenship in May of 2018. The Citizenship Service is currently working on applications from March of 2017. So over a year behind when I applied. So my shit is going to be waiting for a while. I'll be lucky to vote in the 2020 election. And that's not an exaggeration. That is literally an estimate from the fucking citizenship website. I can't vote. I would really have liked to this year. But you know what legal permanent residents can do? They can advocate for a candidate and they can donate to a candidate. So this is me using my limited not being a citizen power to say, fucking go and vote this year. It's super, super important. And I'm stepping off of my soapbox now.
I have one more cool thing that's not related to politics. So we are currently in a golden age of fresh waifus and husbands. So the Spyro Reignited trilogy keeps reintroducing their character designs. It is
a gift that keeps on giving.
So we've got the kangaroo gal, Sheila. We got the...
Of course she's named Sheila. Of course she is fucking named Sheila.
We got the fawn gal.
I just got that. Damn.
Yeah, because Aussie Sheila
escapes me at the moment. We've got the cheetah boy Hunter, who's a Twinkie cheetah. And now they've reintroduced this character, Bianca, who's apparently a bunny sorcerer or of some sort. Then, of course, we got the redesigned Spyro and the redesign of all the other dragons who have been redesigned into all sorts of different burly, buff, or big daddy types. This game is going to generate a shitload of new furries.
I feel like that fucking anime meme screen cap. Is this a husbando?
Yeah, like all the dragons have different body types. There's a couple that are big and buff. There are a couple that are like older and grizzled that have beards and big bellies, and that's totally going to hit the buttons for certain folks. And yeah, Bianca, she's this yellow bunny, looks kind of Lola Bunny-ish. Blue eyes.
Saren sent me some very lovely Rule 34 of her earlier this evening.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, well, this character is, they're just leaning 110% going into the fur bait. And this, of course, also happens around the same time, and there's still a nice flood of Isabel porn.
Yep, I've never played Animal Crossing, was not familiar with the character, but the porn's really nice. She's a really cute character.
Yep, so that is fun. That is always like, oh, look, this game is totally going to be incredibly furry, and it's going to cause some sexual awakenings in some young kids who play this game.
I think ending on the note of hot furry bait is a good one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's always more hot furry bait to be had, and E621, I have no doubt, has added quite a bit more of her stuff since then. So, we're going to wrap this up now, because it is
10.
Past 10 o'clock, as our usual stop time.
Sabrina and I need to be able to stand up again shortly in order to close our 10 o'clock hour.
Got
to
wiggle.
Stand ring.
Yep.
Got to stand up, walk around a little bit, so closing our my rings is very important. You can find the show online at SouthPawsCast. That is our username on Twitter, Tumblr, at gmail.com if you want to send us emails. Also, importantly, it is our patreon.com address if you want to support the show. Sabrina and I have been continuing to do little movie commentaries for the Patreon. We actually just recorded one for Solo because neither of us had seen it in theaters, so that's actually a more recent movie that we covered. Now, what was the other one we watched?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street
was out last week. Solo will be out this week.
Cool. So if you're interested in hearing us and my roommate Doggo chat about movies that we're introducing Tavern to, you know, feel free to kick us a buck for access to that. You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf. I am also Fuzzwolf on Mastodon at mastodon.social. And of course, you know, Fuzzwolf is brought to you by forplanet.com as always. So check us out there.
And buy their books.
Buy our books. In a couple of weeks, there will be Alamo City Furry Invasion, which Savrin and Ajax will be manning the For Planet table down there. So if you're going to ACFI or ACFI, as Ajax calls it, which is, I think that should catch on, is a good shorthand for that con. So go and check that out. And where can they find you, Savrin?
You can find me on Twitter at Savrin Drake. You can find me on Mastodon at Savrin at snouts.online, who also just launched their Patreon to help cover server costs, because as a decentralized network, you have to pay for your hosting and shit. You
know, and I think they want to open, they maxed out at 300 people, and I think they want to open up to more, so they'll probably have more server costs with that. So
they actually had to support them on Patreon. Push back their migration a week because they had to change up their hosting for more storage. Furries post a lot of shit. And so, like, they might have to eventually be like, all right, media posts after a certain point get deleted. Sorry. You can find me on Twitch at Savrin. Catch me there in my gamer cave supporting my stream like there's nobody watching shirt. That's often the case. Speaking of Gamer Cave,
yes.
I didn't have internet, and so I completely rejiggered my office space, mm-hmm. and now the back wall, which is visible behind me when streaming without the green screen, is now covered in furry bullshit, including two For Planet promotional posters, the Michelle Light collection poster, and the Sampikos 2018, which is the giant Acello. It's fucking nice. And it still counts as a gamer wall because there's one poster on that wall that has gaming-related bullshit on it. The rest of it's furry.
He also found space for several of his Furry Fiesta convention posters.
Yep, 2017 and 2018, Wonderland and Mad Science, done by Rukus. And I also have the FWA 2013, which I think was also Rukus. It's the really nice Finnick.
I'm not sure the artist on that piece, but
yeah.
They usually do pretty cool posters.
Oh, yeah. You'll have to come by and look at it. It's really nice setup.
Yeah.
So, that's me.
I'm Chimera on both Twitter and Telegram. That's K-H-Y-M-A-E-R-A. It's spelled funny. That's primarily where you'll find me these days.
Okay, cool. Well, on that note, good night.
And buy books.